This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The International Monetary Fund says we should spend our way out of the doldrums. From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Happy Labor Day. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org on this Monday, September 5th. Worries about the global economy are weighing heavily on markets. In a tight labor market, maybe having that college degree isn't as valuable as you first thought. And it's Material Girl the singer versus Material Girl the clothing line. All ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
The head of the International Monetary Fund is warning the global economy could worsen. Christine Lagarde called on the U.S. and Europe to help avert disaster by dumping fiscal austerity measures. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now to talk about it. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Why is the IMF suddenly so pessimistic?
Christine Lagarde, the IMF's new chief, says in a German press interview that the outlook has darkened quite quickly over the summer. She says there's been a rapid loss of confidence in the US and in Europe, and she says it's vital that the US and Europe take further steps to stimulate their economies rather than continue on the straight and narrow path of public spending cuts. Tim Loinig of the London School of Economics says three cheers for Christine Lagarde. She's got it exactly right. We do face a downward spiral.
The American job numbers, for example, were terrible, absolutely terrible. So there is good evidence that things are going wrong. Unemployment will go up. More people will lose their homes. That really isn't what we want.
I know, Stephen, the U.S. and Europe have already spent loads of money trying to stimulate the economies. Can they afford more?
Well, Christine Lagarde admits that governments have used up a lot of ammunition in terms of public spending, but she says they can afford to spend more if they work together and coordinate. Anyway, she says they can't afford not to, because if their economies slip back into recession, they'll be in even more trouble.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Later this week, President Obama will give a major speech to Congress on his plans to kickstart employment. Now, just about everybody who's fortunate enough to have a job has been losing ground on wages lately. And it turns out new college graduates are no exception. Marketplace's senior correspondent Bob Moon reports higher education isn't paying dividends as big as it used to.
Lately, the procession of college graduates has had to join the parade of unemployed already looking for work. And according to research by the Economic Policy Institute, that means all their hard studying isn't paying off as much.
Employers know that they don't have to pay big wage and benefit packages when there's a queue of desperate new entrants to the labor market around the block.
Economist Heidi Shearholt says even as college costs have soared, the average starting wage for graduates dropped by roughly $1 an hour over the past decade to around $21.75 for men, $18.50 for women. There's still a wage premium for those who get their degree, but she says it's no longer growing.
College-educated workers do indeed make a lot more money, both to start out with and over their lifetimes, but the payoff is stagnating.
She says there isn't much hope that'll change, not with the jobless rate expected to stay above 8% well into 2014.
With unemployment that high for that long, there's just going to be nothing that's going to lift these wages up anytime soon.
If it's any consolation, Shearholt says that degree is still likely to improve your chance of at least finding a job. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
And all this week, Marketplace will feature special coverage on jobs, the nation's high unemployment, and what can be done to fix it. Well, there's a Senate hearing tomorrow that's going to look at big financial problems facing the U.S. Postal Service. The agency has a $5.5 billion payment due this month for future retirees' health care, but won't be able to cover it and is looking to Congress for help. Also tomorrow, the Senate Banking Committee will consider the nomination of Richard Cordray as director of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, Cordray faces an uphill battle because some Republicans are opposed to the idea of having a director of that bureau in the first place. From Washington, here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Richard Cordray is used to challenges and tough questions. Before he became a lawyer and attorney general of Ohio, he was a five-time Jeopardy champ. He answered this tough question on potholes in a 1987 show.
This city's streets contain 927,000 potholes. Richard,
what is New York City?
You are correct.
The road to the job Cordray's been nominated for is full of potholes and a major detour from Congressman Sean Duffy. The Wisconsin Republican-sponsored legislation eliminating the bureau director. Instead, the bureau would be run by a five-member commission. Congressman Duffy says a single director would be too powerful, adding to overregulation by federal agencies.
The rules that come from these agencies can have really dramatic impacts on especially small community banks and credit unions.
But consumer advocates say Duffy wants to weaken the bureau. Susanna Montezemolo is with the Center for Responsible Lending.
By having a five-member commission, we will have a situation in which no one person is taking responsibility.
The debate leaves the Consumer Bureau in limbo. It can't write many new rules without a confirmed director. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You can check out the numbers anytime at our website, marketplace.org. Also, you can follow our show on Facebook and Twitter at Marketplace Radio. I'm on Twitter as well at Radio Chio.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
And now the Marketplace Global Perspective. The Mexican government continues to wage war against drug cartels. Some say not hard enough, though. But all the violence just south of the border is affecting Mexico's economy. The BBC's Julian Migliorini reports.
Mexico may be a country at war, but it's not apparent on the streets of the capital, Mexico City. Mexico's overall economy is booming. It grew by 5.5% in 2010, and forecasts for this year are also optimistic. But it's pretty clear that Mexico would be growing even more quickly if not for the widespread violence in some parts of the country, such as along the border with the United States. John Ackerman is an analyst at Mexico's National Autonomous University.
The Mexican government is in denial in terms of the real impact of violence on tourism and on economic development in general.
The government argues investment is still flowing, and it uses the example of Walmart to prove its point. The American retail giant recently announced that it will invest more than $1 billion in Mexico this year. The company's Mexican spokesperson is Antonio Ocaranza.
Year by year, we continue to have historic levels of sales. So we have not seen an impact of that situation on our sales or the way we do business.
But the story is different for small business owners. Many of them suffer dearly from the escalation in crime and violence in the form of extortion by organized gangs.
Hace seis meses.
This woman runs a small company. 6 months ago, she was approached by armed men demanding she pay more than $4,000 every month or her family would be killed. She agreed to pay. Her story is far from unique, and with the drug war engulfing more and more areas of the country, including its industrial heart, the northern city of Monterrey, few in Mexico believe that its economy will remain bulletproof. In Mexico City, I'm the BBC's Julian Migliorini for Marketplace.
The Venice Film Festival is underway this week in Italy, and in a city where water and canals are the main attraction, a sunken piece of land is a stark reminder of Europe's financial crisis. The BBC's Emma Jones reports from Venice.
3 years ago, the Venice Film Festival started ambitious plans to build a $170 million state-of-the-art cinema complex. The first part of funding, some $54 million, was spent on excavations and dealing with toxic asbestos, which was found during the digging of the proposed site. But the project ran out of money, thanks to Italy's economic woes. And so what's left is a literal crater right next to the red carpet. Mark Adams is a chief critic of industry magazine Screen International. He says since the global economic crisis of 2008, the challenge for Venice is to continue to attract American interest.
Any film wants that big North American deal. They don't come in as many numbers because it's too far away and it's just before Toronto for them. And it's very expensive here.
As studios batten down the hatches and commission only safe box office bets, more names are flocking to make independent cinema, of which Venice is a champion. So this year, Kate Winslet and George Clooney are all here for films by directors like David Cronenberg and Roman Polanski. In Venice, I'm the BBC's Emma Jones for Marketplace.
I suspect many a holiday reveler will tip back a beer or two today at the backyard barbecue. And for brewers, capturing a larger market share is big business. Well, for the new owners of Pabst Blue Ribbon, moving its headquarters from suburban Chicago to Los Angeles fits in with the company's marketing strategy and its convenience. Adam Popescu reports.
Privately held Pabst was bought last year by Dean Metropoulos. He's made a career and a fortune reviving older brands like Bumblebee Tuna and Chef Boyardee. His two sons, now Pabst co-owners, and new CEO John Cochran, all lived in L.A. at the time of the purchase.
So we sat down and talked about it and decided that both for us personally as well as for the business, Los Angeles would be a better place.
L.A., of course, means celebrities. And one strategy for boosting sales is star-powered endorsements. In April, Pabst signed rapper Snoop Dogg as the pitchman for a new malt liquor by Colt 45. Beverage analyst Tim McPeak says too many celebrity endorsements risk alienating core consumers, like the hipsters who've adopted the company's iconic Pabst Blue Ribbon brand.
My concern would be that trying to raise the profile might actually have some unintended consequences and backfire against who their core market already currently is.
However the strategy plays out, the move makes sense in terms of potential customers. Los Angeles ranks second in the number of beer drinkers nationwide. In Los Angeles, I'm Adam Popescu for Marketplace.
Makers of consumer products spend nearly $30 billion a year to figure out what sells, what doesn't, and why. And these days, some are using technology first developed for British fighter pilots. It's called eye tracking. We sent reporter Christopher Worth to have a look.
First, I want to find out what eye tracking is. So I've come to this supermarket in West London to meet Ian James from a company called iTracker. It's one of a growing number of agencies studying what consumers actually look at when they see ads or packaging on store shelves. James hands me a pair of glasses straight out of a sci-fi movie.
If you can pop those on.
Mounted on top are two small cameras.
One is a field of vision camera, which collects everything that's in front of you.
And the other camera is pointed at my pupil and follows it wherever I look. When that's laid over the video of what I actually see, you get a set of crosshairs tracking every detail I focus on in the store.
And if you go off and do your shopping and come back and we'll have a look at the tape.
Okay. Sorry to bother you. Could you point me to the laundry detergent aisle? The clerk leads me to a long row with at least a dozen brands to choose from. Liquid detergent, powdered detergent. But my eyes quickly settle on a big blue box with a red logo and an image of a father and son playing in the grass. A detergent called Persil. And it costs £6.40. I bring the glasses back to Jane's and we look at the tape of my purchase.
Okay, so you're now going to the detergent aisle. You're trying to decide which one to go for.
I like to think of myself as a price-conscious shopper, but when we watch the tape, I realize I hardly look at price tags at all.
The amount of time people actually spend looking at price is very, very small.
Jane says my little test shows why eye tracking is so useful. Instead of relying on what people in focus groups say they look at, marketers can see for themselves what packaging catches a shopper's eye. And eye tracking can also help marketers figure out why we connect with certain products.
Generally, we shop in a subconscious mode.
I played my video for Nick Widdowson, who works with eye tracking at Unilever. It's the company that makes that box of Persil laundry detergent. Remember that picture of the father and son on the front? Widdowson notices I can't take my eyes off it.
From the amount of time you were looking at it, suggests that image seems to have struck a chord with you as a shopper.
And when I think about it, he's probably right. I am getting married soon, and my fiancé and I are thinking about starting a family. Who knew shopping could be so revealing? In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
And finally, singer Madonna is being sued for naming her Macy's clothing line Material Girl. Yeah, Madonna did coin the phrase way back in the 80s with her hit song, but a brand called TA Triumph is suing because they've been selling their own line under the Material Girl label for 14 years. Madonna's spokesperson says they want the case thrown out of court because the singer is the, quote, senior user of the trademark. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Labor Day. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.